Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. It is December 20th, 2012, and according to some people, tomorrow the world is going to end. And so anyway, let me name a few of the clowns that will disappear from the woodwork tomorrow. Let me start with a real clown named Marshall Masters. We're all going to be very glad when that yo-yo leaves the scene. There's a whole laundry list. I've got a big pile of books here that are 2012, End of the World, Planet X, Nibiru, everything in the kitchen sink. And it's supposed to all end tomorrow. So at any rate, I could go on. I don't want to give anybody any free advertising. But that's one person that will be really great to see that clown out of the picture. But, of course, supported by the disinformation crew, they're going to have to go out and find some new nutcases. But, you know, they brought back in Nancy Leader. Right at the end here, she's been pumping that 2012, December 21st, Planet X, Nibiru will be here, and she talks to aliens. And, of course, May 15th, 2003, her prediction did not come to pass, which gave fuel to NASA coming in, the White Hats riding in, saving the day and telling everybody how foolish all this Planet X stuff is. I mean, the dog and pony show is so obvious that, you know, it's just as clear as the writing on the wall. But at any rate, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about this other than to mention a lot of the copycat clowns out there have tried to copycat my work and change it into goofiness. And, of course, this is all orchestrated by the disinformation crew. It's really been a big part of what I have done to fill in the blanks here, to connect the dots between the NASA white hats who don't know what's going on. They think they're defending the world with their garbage tier 2 science. And then, of course, they're defending it against the nutcases that are out there that are nutcases. And I got to admit, it's kind of funny, but the NASA tier 2 science looks pretty good compared to their stuff. Anyway, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this show, but tomorrow, 21st of December, the world's supposed to end. But I do want to make the point that I don't know if this is going to happen. I certainly don't. I hope it does not happen. But all of the indicators are pointing to the possibility that they have set up what you might call sleeper groups to commit suicide. And it was very, very odd. A number of weeks ago, this all started with David Morrison, NASA scientist, coming out and saying that he's getting all kinds of emails from kids and that he's worried about kids committing suicide. Gee, I didn't know that NASA space scientists were psychologists, psychoanalysts. And so anyway, and how do they know all of these people were kids? And how do they know that they weren't set up emails from the disinformation crew? Anyway, lots of questions there. But oddly enough, and most oddly enough, most peculiarly enough, this past week on CNN, and I've kind of read the articles just to keep up with them, to see what the disinformation crew is coming up with. But oddly enough, this last week on CNN, they come up with the story that no kids are going to commit suicide. It'll only be adults. I cannot slap myself on the forehead enough times to see the antics, the hula hoops that these people are jumping through. And how on earth now, at first, David Morrison is saying, is all these people are kids, they're really worried about the youth committing suicide. And then last week, the CNN article says, nope, there won't be any kids committing suicide, only adults. Wow. I mean, this is getting deep. You got to put your hip boots on, boys, because the old, you know what, is getting pretty deep out there. Anyway, like I say, I don't want to belabor this, but, okay, the scenario would be, okay, NASA, and here's the other comment that's come from the NASA boys, who are the white hats out there defending the realm. They're saying that they really tried hard, but they don't think they're quite going to be able to prevent the suicides. They've used the press. And I want to go back to 2003 and just reiterate what happened back then. Of course, May 15th, 2003, Nancy Leader, crazy lady, talks to aliens, predicts that the world's going to end, gets huge amount of national, international press, radio interviews on all the top radio shows, debates, Phil Plait, man, Phil, you've really dug yourself down in the basement debating Nancy Leader. Wow. But anyway, whatever. The story was that the world was going to end, and this was coordinated with a full moon, a very unusual big orange full moon. And because of the location and the conditions of this full moon, it was first to come up over Japan, then United States, etc., as the Earth spinned on December or on May 15, 2003. And Nancy Leader kept saying it's going to be a big orange ball in the sky. And this was going on since about the 1996, during the Hale-Bopp era. That's when old Nancy started her, right after the Heaven's Gate event. And I always thought Nancy was the mole, anyway, in the Heaven's Gate thing that led the powers that be in to murder those people. It was not a mass suicide, it was a mass murder. But at any rate, that gave plenty of fuel for the white hat NASA guys to write in. And by the way, it was the NASA scientists who faked the data that they accused Art Bell of having phonied photographs of Hale-Bopp Companion on his webpage, and that came from Courtney Brown and Chuck Schrammick, two completely independent sources. But at any rate, but good old Ali Hainau of the Hawaiian Observatory was the one who faked the photos that were published in the newspapers showing that Hale-Bopp did not have a companion. And then at the Canary Island Hale-Bopp International Conference, which I got disinvited to, by the way, which was a whole story in itself, because I was one of the speakers that was going to speak at that, and then got disinvited when all the NASA boys showed up, Brian Marsden and the laundry list of other NASA comet scientists to whitewash the whole Hale-Bopp story. And what's the first thing on the list? The companion of Hale-Bopp. But they never came back to the press. They never came back to Art Bell and said, there was a companion. It was me on the Art Bell show with Whitley Strieber, Art, myself, and a few of the boys from the Millennium Group at that time, and primarily a guy, I got a name here, Earl Crockett. His name has not come up for a long time, but a guy who really did some powerful work back then, back in the Hale-Bopp days, writing articles, etc. But at any rate, exposed to Art Bell with Whitley Strieber online also that night on the Art Bell show, showing that Art had been taken to the cleaners by the NASA boys. And Art found out on the air that he had been taken to the cleaners. And that accusation that Art was responsible for the Heaven's Gate suicide still will be posted on Wikipedia, all disinformation. And boy, once they get these stories in place, they don't want to change them for nobody's grandma. But anyway, let's go back to 2003, leading up three nights before the May 15, 2003, I'm listening to the Coast to Coast AM show. And on comes, I can't remember who it was, but somebody from the NASA side of the house spilled the beans, and then somebody calls in, and it was obviously one of those planned call-ins on the Coast to Coast show, and this guy is like, I don't know if I can take it. And at that point, it was George Norrie, and he goes, well, what do you mean? He says, you're not talking about suicide. And the guy goes, yeah, that's suicide. And, oh, no. And it was just so scripted. The scripting was so bad. At that point, this is 3 days before May 15, 2003. So I got on the horn to NASA, up to the top of the ranks in NASA, and I said, look, boys, if you don't use your power of the press to stop this suicide event, then you will be as culpable as the nutcases that are out pumping this misinformation. And guess what? There were four suicide groups that were supposed to pull off a suicide, one in Japan, one in California, one in Wisconsin, where good old Nance leader up at her little powwow there with all her little followers, and then one in France. They had a four-way mass suicide that was supposed to occur. And guess what? I put so much pressure on NASA that if this happened and they didn't use their power of the press to stop it, that they would be culpable as much as the nutcases. And guess what? It didn't happen. But now, the point of saying all of this is that now the NASA boys are saying, look, we've tried everything we can, but we don't think we can stop the suicides. And so, as I said, it's getting deeper and deeper. You better get your hip boots on. And that gives a new meaning to PhD, piled higher and deeper. That's an old expression. The first time I heard that, by the way, I was at Cornell. It was 1979, and a lady named Marie Jones, who was Carl Sagan's secretary, she was typing my documents that I was publishing, much to the chagrin of those people. But Marie and a lot of the secretaries weren't exactly fond of the astronomer, space science, astrophysics community professors there and scientists because they were so arrogant. So they had an expression that they would say under their breath that, you know, when somebody said PhD, they'd laugh and chuckle and go, yeah, piled higher and deeper. But at any rate, okay, so that's enough of that. So we come up, flash forward to 2012, the day before the 21st, the winter solstice of this year. And the reason I'm saying this is because I'm trying to give you a history of suicide issues that have revolved around Nibiru, end of the world, Hale-Bopp, comets, you name it. And so what I'm hoping does not happen tomorrow, and I have put as much effort as I could do into dissuading the public from looking at the end-of-the-world nutcases, trying to point out that this is a big dog and pony show. It's a controlled dialogue between orchestrated by the disinformation crew with the nutcases claiming end-of-the-world 2012, and then the NASA white hats riding in to save the day. But this is what 95 to 99% of the public is going to see and hear. And so when I saw the notice that NASA is really trying hard to prevent the suicides, but they don't think, with all of the publicity they put out, they don't quite think they're going to be able to prevent them. And then they come out, and last week they say, no, there won't be any kids committing suicide, just adults. And I'm going, man, the acting is getting real bad here, folks, real bad. At any rate, that's why I hope this doesn't happen. But what would be the successor events if there were some mass suicides over this December 21st? BS is all you can call it. Well, then the government would have to step in and say, no, we cannot have anybody talking about Planet X. Only the official government story of Planet X can be allowed in the press, because all of these unofficial nutcases are causing people to commit suicide. This would be the end result. And in the mother loves dog political correctness society we live in today, it would probably be pushed through just like all the 911 legislation. Oh, we got to protect the children. And that's why I was surprised when they came out at first and talked about the children committing suicide. And I thought, oh, man, they're going to go out and off a bunch of kids just to make a point on Planet X. And then they come out last week and they say, nope, there won't be any kids, just adults. Anyway, that's all I'm going to put into this. We'll see what happens tomorrow. And that's all I can tell you. Wait and see what the Dog and Pony Show will give us tomorrow. And then, of course, all of the laughter in the standard press will come out. Ah, ha, ha. People in the, you know, I saw commercials about investing in the stock market. Invest because don't worry about 2012, end of the world, because the stock market will be here afterwards. I saw all kinds of commercials playing off of this. So at any rate, there'll be a lot of laughter, and then it'll be harder and harder to get the real message out to the general public. And in any of these disinformation campaigns, the point, you have to understand, the entire point is to fool 95% of the public. And I know my listenership is certainly not covered in that 95%. And so I hope, but like I've always said, I don't want 95% of the public listening to my show and trying to catch up to what's going on, because they would have it all distorted and backwards before the sun went down. I only want people who are really interested, really astute, and really willing to put the time in, not the throwaway Bic Pen crowd that wants a 20-second answer, and that's what they're going to run with, and then they combine it with 87 different things, and they have a half-baked idea of how the world spins. I don't want those people listening to my show. If that's you, hey, turn the radio off right now, go away, drink some Pepsi, and watch some football. You know, don't listen to my show. I only want the people that are going to spend serious time listening, studying, and understanding what's going on this planet and this side of the universe. Okay, so at any rate, I'm going to switch gears here. I've spent about, it turns out to be about 18 minutes on that topic. But as I said, we'll see what happens by sundown, by midnight, the end of tomorrow. We'll see what the disinformation crew has in store for us and how the rest of the news media plays on it. This past week, a good friend of mine has passed away, and out of respect for him, I'm not going to mention his name, just that there's somebody who for the past decade and longer I've had talked to just about daily, and somebody who listened avidly to a lot of talk radio. And so that gave me a good perspective on what was happening in the world of talk radio, because needless to say, I don't have time with my busy schedule and the other things going on in the background. I don't have time to listen to all of the various talk show hosts every day. I would like to, but a lot of the disinformation programs, it's important to understand what they're saying, and many times what they're not saying. What are the topics they don't talk about, or what are the topics they twist or don't allow to happen? You'll notice there's some shows that I've never been a guest on. I've been a guest on probably every radio show on this side of the planet, but there's some I will never be a guest on. They don't allow my name to be mentioned. Those are the controlled radio shows, and they're just fishing networks. They're just out there. They're trying to make you think that they are your best friend, trying to defend you. But you'll notice that nothing ever happens. Lots of huffing and puffing going on, but they never blow the wall down. And so, at any rate, this guy, a friend of mine, listened to a lot of radio, helped me out. Whenever I had a question, an issue, I'd bounce it off this guy. And a lot of times feedback, it just helps to have people like that. I've got some other friends like that it's just good to talk to. You know, during the week I talk to people, close associates, and it allows me to talk the things that I'm doing through. And before you listen to what I'm saying, many times I've talked about these topics numerous times with other people to somewhat solidify in my own mind how I want to present material to you. But unfortunately, a good friend of mine passed away this week and sorely missed. And by the way, when I was talking about cancer over the past year, this is the guy I was talking about. I don't think he ever had cancer. I think he had an infection. I think we're dealing with complete incompetence at best in the medical industry, and that's the people that watched his case. And I said all along, he doesn't have cancer. He's got an infection. And by mistake at one point, they started giving him antibiotics, and he started getting better. So they took him off the antibiotics. Wow. Anyway, sorely missed. Unfortunately, over the years, a lot of good friends have gone, have passed away, or a lot of good radio talk show hosts have left the air. It's getting kind of thin out here. So at any rate, another person will be sorely missed. Just a quick product announcement. I'm going to be posting as soon as possible. It possibly will be up as I make this, as I talk about this tonight on tonight's show. But I'm going to be posting on my sales webpage bulk filter replacement filter quantities, so you can buy 10 at a time. So there will be the dome filters, which, by the way, are excellent filters. They're twice the water passing capacity of the 7-inch candles. It's just that they don't fit in the stainless steel containers. They will fit in the bigger plastic containers, but we call them domes because they look like a little dome. They're little short 4-inch diameter domes, dome filters, and you can get 10 of them at a time on sale. You get a real good price, plus, of course, you get shipping. You only pay for one shipping, and you can get 10 of these, or you can get 10 of the candles. So if you have like a stainless steel water filter and you want to stock up for the future, you can buy 10 of the 7-inch TheraSil candles at a time, and at a special price. So to see that, just go to my web page, go to the sales page, and look for the information there. Once again, that's a new item that will be for sale, because some people do want to order a bunch of these, and I think it's a great idea. So you get a good savings, and you get basically a bunch of them for free, and when you make this order, and plus you only pay shipping one time, a basic, real basic shipping rate to the 50 states. So once again, go to the webpage JMCC. S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo, 7 letters, JMCCSCI.com, and that's short for JMcCannyScience.com. But at any rate, go there, and now that we're just about over with the Christmas, all the Christmas rush, I know people will start to turn their attention once again to becoming prepared. And by the way, in spite of the fact that the end of the world, 2012, all of that, there's always a flip side to this coin. And it's like this. by talking about Planet X and making it into a crazy story, end of the world, Nibiru, all of this, what they've actually done is a lot of people have woken up to this. So out of that residue of people, some of them will still be looking for answers. Some of them aren't going to buy the, oh, well, it didn't happen on December 21st. It's going to wake some people up who didn't wake up before. So I think the end result is that people who are thinking, people who want to know the truth, people who are looking for real information are going to seek it out. And so there's a good side to this. I think it's comical in that there are some blogs out there and associated with web pages that slam me and slam my work and all of this, really misrepresent it and then slam the misrepresentations. But be that as it may, then people see my name. A lot of people see my name who wouldn't have seen it otherwise. So they end up on my webpage. Once they're on my webpage, then they don't necessarily remember what sent them to my page. Now they're on my webpage. So it's an old Hollywood expression. Bad advertising is good advertising. That's why the Hollywood stars all want, if there's something bad that happened to them or whatever, they get their name in the press. It's free press. So they don't care that their name shows up, and then people want to see them in a movie. There's an expression that Ford, the head of the Ford Motor Company, the original Henry Ford, said, I don't care if you say anything good or bad about Ford, just say Ford. It's the same idea. It doesn't matter what people say, because it puts the name in other people's in their head. And once they're to your webpage, once they're on my webpage, they're not going to remember that they're at some blog webpage that's bad-mouthing me. They're at my webpage. So what I think is comical about this is I actually saw this on a couple of the blogs where they prohibit people from mentioning my name. They won't allow anybody on the blog to mention my name or put a reference to my webpage, because they know it's good advertising, and they actually say it on there. We don't allow Jim McCanny's name, I've seen it, emails go back to people, and then people forward it to me. They say, how come my post wasn't posted there? And they say, well, we don't provide advertising. So, at any rate, I love it. They're trying to badmouth me, but at the same time, people are ending up on my webpage. Oh, well, life in the big city. As we prepare for life after 2012, December 21st, of course, this coming year I will be spending a good deal of time talking about the Comet C-2012-S1. And because this baby is going to put on a light show. And, of course, comets can fizzle out, but I think this one is going to give us some real observations, starting in about October of next year. So there's a long hiatus. There's a long wait. The comet, and this is, I find, very comical. NASA came out, and the official diameter of this comet is about 26 miles in diameter. Hale-Bopp, they said, was 40. Now, we know that Hale-Bopp was a small planet-sized nucleus, because I saw a picture of it as it left the solar system, and I saw volcanoes, just like volcanoes on the small moon Io of Jupiter. There were volcanic plumes coming off of it, and it somehow got slipped onto the internet, and I saw the pictures of the nucleus of Hale-Bopp, and it was round, it was planet-sized, and there were volcanic plumes coming off of it. But at any rate, the official lie NASA claim was that the nucleus of Hale-Bopp was 40 miles in diameter. Now, that's a whopper. That's a big one, according to NASA, but the real diameter was probably 1,000 miles in diameter. Okay, now this comet is coming in, and they say it's pretty big, but it's 26 miles in diameter. 26 kilometers, I think, was actually the term. But what's funny is I saw one of the webpage blogs, and they were talking about it being a whopping big 3 miles in diameter. Now, let's go back to 1986, Halley's Comet. Halley's Comet, well, they had a close-up Giotto spacecraft, got right in there, measured, and so they got a real good measurement of the Halley's Comet nucleus. It's about 7 miles long. It's about the size of the island Manhattan. That's about the size of the nucleus of Halley's Comet. And so for now scientists to come out on one side and say it's only 3 miles across is very humorous. Remember that Comet Lovejoy, they said, was a whopping 600 meters, that most comets are 10 to 20 meters in diameter. So what's funny here is NASA can't get its story straight on the diameter and the size of comet nuclei. Now, they can easily measure the size and diameter and all kinds of properties, the spin rate, with radio telescopes, and you know they've done this. So when they make these estimates, you know that it's total pure disinformation. These are the Tier 2 scientists. Now, there's another piece of misinformation that's coming along. At first, they were saying that this could be the Great Comet of 1680. There was an immense comet seen in 1680. It covered the whole sky. And, of course, at that time, people could only draw pictures of it. So that's all we have of the Great Comet of 1680. NASA was saying this could be the comet of 1680. Well, let's calculate 1680 up to right now. Well, that's just a few hundred years. And so the official statement, however, is that the orbit of comet C2012, I'm talking about C2012 right now, is like millions of years. And so here again, NASA is lying through their teeth. They can't keep their story straight, so what's the real story? Is it the comet of 1680? Is it a comet with a million-year orbit that's never been here before? Well, don't look to NASA for an answer. They are for sure, at this point, living up to their name, NASA, never a straight answer. And there is an answer. And there is one answer, and it can be easily determined, measured, and published. But we're not getting it. We're not getting that information in the public eye here. So at any rate, this will be interesting to see. I've also done something we learned to do back in the Hale-Bopp era, is to capture on a daily basis all of what I've called the ephemeris. An ephemeris is the data, the orbital data of a comet, or of any object, any celestial object in the solar system. But the ephemeris for a comet, now a bigger comet can change its orbit, and so the ephemeris can change. We watched and captured the change of the orbit of Hale-Bopp on a daily basis, and this was one of the things that was really outstanding. And of course, when Hale-Bopp was first discovered, Brian Marsden, who at the time, well, he's passed away now, but at the time he was the curator of the Smithsonian, and that's where they do the cataloging of comets, and he made a public statement that Hale-Bopp would not change its orbit very much because it was large. And the reason being is that he gave, of course, was that given the dirty snowball comet model, which, of course, is incorrect, but he said they, of course, that's what they're promoting, the dirty snowball comet model. He said, well, the jetting would not be enough to alter Hale-Bopp's orbit. But it started to change. In fact, he had to be the one who published the data on a daily basis. And it got rather embarrassing because every day the orbit of Hale-Bopp has changed. And so after Hale-Bopp went through the solar system, went or swung around the sun and took off, then they said, oh, it was an orbital change due to a close passage of Jupiter. Well, sorry, folks, it didn't come that close to Jupiter to cause a major orbital change. And it was the real reason for the orbital change was the tail drag. The tail drag of the comet was causing on a daily basis, the tail drag of Hale-Bopp was causing its orbit to change. But of course, the Dirty Snowball Comet model prediction was that there wouldn't be a change, so they had to find an excuse. They had to sweep the data under the rug. They had to lie, and this is just standard, typical fare from NASA. Lies, covering data, sweeping the data under the rug, changing it, anything they can do to save the old snowball theory, the Dirty Snowball Comet model theory. But at any rate, we are the point is that back in the Hale-Bopp days, we learned that you have to save the data when it's visible, because if it changes, NASA isn't going to come back and republish the data that was there at the time. So I'm just telling you that I have been saving this and in a nice, safe place, and we're going to watch this closely as this comet gets bigger and bigger. And they're saying, the word is about this comet, that it is pretty big, that it's much bigger than expected. And this also brings up a point that and it's very strange, the announcement date, it was September 21st, 2012, is when the Russian observatory made the announcement that they had discovered a comet. And I thought, gee, that's kind of a strange date to make an announcement like that. How long have they been watching this baby come in? Well, it's big enough, and NASA's got the equipment. The Tier 1 people have the equipment. They've been probably watching this baby for 10 years, which brings up a possibility that all of the 2012 end of the world December 21st stuff was a precursor, trying to get that damage control out there before this big comet comes in next year and lights up the sky, and the whole world is going to be up looking at this baby. And right now, I would say that NASA, I would say two things about NASA. They are doing serious damage control already regarding anything to do with Planet X, especially about comets and about this comet. And I would say that they let me use an expression. This is a great expression I heard one time. They said there's the best bilge pump. Now, a bilge pump is on a boat. It pumps the water that's in the bilge of the boat out so that the boat doesn't sink. But anyway, there's kind of a funny expression, and I've seen some funny cartoons go along with this. It says the best bilge pump is a scared sailor with a bucket. Now, you see the boat's filling up with the water, and the sailor is there throwing the water out as fast as he can with the bucket. And they say that's the best bilge pump because he's going down with the boat if the boat sinks. And so anyway, that's kind of I think it's a comical expression. But with NASA, I think that applies to NASA, especially the Comet Boys, because they got their hands full. This comet's going to come in and light up the sky, and I think it's going to. And these comets can fizzle. We've had numerous comets that have come in, and they predicted it. It's the comet of the century, and they fizzled. And people get egg all over their face, and I don't think that should happen. I don't think that people should get egg on their face because, in standard science, that they predicted the comet would be big, and it didn't materialize. So what? What's the big deal? It looked like it was a big comet. Look, it was going to be big. They made some announcements, and it didn't happen. So why rake these poor guys over the cold? I mean, it looked like it was going to be big. So, and then there's some other comets that didn't look like they would be very big that really explode into brightness. But this comet, C2012S1, by the way, where is it right now? It's out about at the orbit of Jupiter, moving in, and in October next year, it will move in across the asteroid belt and start approaching Mars in mid-September next year. And I will have plenty of information where to look, what to look for. And I'm hoping that this thing will actually start to grow and to actually encapsulate Mars in its atmosphere. I was on a radio show this past week, and there was a call-in. Somebody called in and said, had I heard somebody was predicting that in June next year, there would be asteroids hitting Earth caused by Comet C2012-S1. And I said, well, no, that just can't be true, because the comet isn't going to be to the planet Mars until next October. So, sure, it passed through the asteroid belt, but to imagine that somehow it's flinging asteroids that are going to hit Earth by next June is a pretty tall tale. And if something did hit June next year, how would you say that it came from that comet? I mean, there's no cause and effect relationship. There's no data that would suggest that anything that hits us next June came from the comet, even if it came from the same direction. It might be just coincidence. So at any rate, the point is they're already starting to target next June. And here's another standard annual disinformation ploy. They always target June for asteroids going to hit Earth, kill everybody, and it's already starting. So you can see that the disinformation crew is already busy at work in 2013 trying to get in for misinformation out there, crazy information, throw flak, basically, the old World War II technique. An airplane throws a lot of metal particles out, or pieces of metal shrapnel out the back end to confuse the radar. And that's what is going on here. They're already targeting next June. Back in the late 90s, early 2000s, every year in June, in the course, the 2003 Crazy Lady Talks to Aliens Planet X thing, that was in May, approaching June. So they always target that June period. And there's a very good reason, and that is because that's when Robert Harrington was down in New Zealand taking pictures of what they called Planet X. That was the NASA study funded by NASA, search for Planet X, operated by the Naval Observatory under the direction of Harrington, Dr. Harrington. And, of course, he died mysteriously, and his work was scuttled. But it seems like they love to target that May-June time frame with misinformation, because they're just worried that people will come up with something in that time frame, and they want to be sure to have a lot of misinformation out there. In that time frame. It's just annual. So they're already starting right now to target June of next year with misinformation. So anyway, I think we're going to see a lot of misinformation. And as I said, I see NASA already circling the wagons regarding comet issues. They're going to have a real, real tough time with the whole planet. Now, this comet, C2012-1, if it doesn't change its orbit when it passes by Mars, and that would be a long shot, it depends, we're going to have to see, but if it has a planet-sized orbit, it's going to come about 7 million miles from the planet Mars. And that's a goodly distance. That's about 28 lunar distances. But it's not that far away, so I think we are going to see some electrical discharging. We're going to see the comet brightening, doing some funny things up there, some things that we have not, by the way, seen a comet come this close to a planet in modern times. The last time something came this close, a comet of this size came this close to a planet, it happened to be planet Earth, and it happened to be about 4,000 years ago or more. And so that's what we see in the Colburn. We see the Moses event, that the big comet Venus came close to Earth. They also talk about the big comet Venus, the proto-planet comet Venus, before it came the planet Venus. They talk about it going by Mars, ripping the oceans and atmosphere off of Mars, leaving the dry, red, dusty planet that we see today. With all of the topography, erosion, etc., that we see today. And NASA's up there looking for that water. They can't decide if there was water or not, but if there was, it was billions of years ago. you know, like I say, PhD all over the place. But, yeah, they're already circling the wagons, and NASA is going to have a real tough time convincing the world that comets are little dangerous, or they're not dangerous, they're just little puppy conglomerates of snow and ice and this little teeny, teeny thing that just can't harm a flea. And when people look up in the sky and they see this thing stretching from one end of the sky to the other and flipping around and doing somersaults up there, and potentially giving us auroras and interacting with Earth, it's going to be a goodly distance from Earth. The closest approach is going to be 37 million miles, so that's a long ways. But as it moves out, it starts to become linearly aligned with Earth. I've already talked about this. On January of 2014, it'll be linearly aligned with Jupiter. We have the comet and Earth, a new moon, and then Venus. So we have a cross-solar system, heavy-duty electrical alignment with the comet up and behind us. By the way, don't forget that we're going to be aligned ourselves with this comet, just Earth, and a new moon passing in January, around January 8th of this coming year, 2013. So we could get some activity here. We could start to see some activity, although the comet, remember, will still be out around the orbit of Jupiter. And so, but remember that I said before, in 2014 January, when this trans-Jupiter alignment occurs, we could see something happen. That comet could become a red sulfur dioxide comet with its tail stretching all the way out to the zone by Jupiter. And if that disconnects and hands its tail off to Earth, we could see some activity on Earth that we haven't seen since biblical times. Red sulfur dioxide and other volatiles coming into the upper atmosphere. So at any rate, that will be interesting to see. And, you know, all again, these are long shots, but I want people prepared to look for this or look for other effects, just possibly auroras, severe weather situations. It's hard to say. It's very hard to predict because the comet is not going to be that close to Earth. It's just that all of these alignments are there. And once, it's also during a time solar maximum. We're in a very weak solar cycle. So is it going to be enough to cause this to happen? We've never had scientific data that we can use to predict this. So these are, we're kind of in uncharted territory here. But I want people to be aware that they're out there looking for this, because if it starts to happen, I want people out there looking and understanding what's going on. And of course, the presses will be pounding and running the full speed ahead with the NASA line that these are all little snowballs and don't worry. It's, you know, the man behind the curtain over there, the great Oz. Don't worry about that man behind the curtain there. Just keep thinking that the Oz is great. I want to turn my attention to Christmas. It's a holiday that I very much cherish. And many years past, in fact, quite a few years running, two things happened annually at Christmas. One is that many years running, I gave a talk about the Christmas star. And there's been a lot of misinformation out, and I'm sure that'll be out there roving around the internet this year and on radio programs, that the Christmas star was simply a planetary alignment or alignment with the moon or, you know, something like that. And what I want to point out is that the Christmas star had to be a comet, and also a very unusual comet. Now, the three kings came from a very long ways away, and they were all looking for a sign. So this was an astrological sign, a sign in the heavens that they all had been expecting literally for thousands of years, that the Messiah would come. And so they followed it, and the way the story is that they saw it in the east, and then they followed it. But remember that they came from the east so that the comet changed positions in the sky. And they followed it westerly until they finally got to the where the baby Jesus was born. And the comet sat up overhead and was a big bright star with a tail. So how is this a planetary alignment? A planetary alignment typically only lasts for a single night. And so the point is that there's so much misinformation out there being pumped up to try and dissuade people that the Christmas star, and not mention the real story, that the Christmas star was a comet, but a very unusual comet. It had some properties that most comets do not have. And I just wonder if one of those properties was that it had a companion. And so that, you know, or some unusual configuration of companions. That would set it aside from all other comets, and that would allow the three kings to go, there it is, get on your camel and ride. And go, and like I say, they saw it, remember the story is, they saw it bright in the east, but when they ended up following it, they followed it to the west. And remember that in those days, you didn't get in your BMW and drive across the desert in a day and a half. No, you took weeks and weeks probably of preparation. They might have been en route for more than a year or so. I mean, and then they met on the way. Their paths converged, and the three kings, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, were the gifts that they brought from the various parts of the east where they came from, and converged on the night of the birth of the Christ child. And so that was just one of the things that they had been looking for literally thousands of years. And so, like I say, there is so much misinformation out there trying to dissuade the public from thinking about the real story. So when you celebrate Christmas, one of the great stories is that the three kings arrived. And I think I've always made the point that it's very special that there were three kings. If it was one king, you'd think, well, you know, maybe it was a mistake. Maybe he was smoking something funny over there in the east. And, you know, who knows? But the fact that there were three kings that came from totally different places and their paths converged, it wasn't two, it was three. Even with two, you'd think, well, see, that's just kind of coincidence. But three, no, that was real. This is a real story. The three kings came, and they were looking for the predicted magi. So at any rate, as you celebrate Christmas this year, remember that these are historical events, and there's a lot of effort out there to destroy these historical events. But anyway, for many years, I used to give a lecture about the Christmas star. And the first year I did it, I didn't have much competition, but almost immediately there were people all over the internet jumping up and down saying that the Christmas star, oh, it was just an alignment of some planets. Like I say, alignment of planets only lasts a night, and then they're unaligned. It's just an optical illusion for a night. So it wasn't, the Christmas star was not some kind of planetary alignment. The other thing I wanted to mention here, that many years ago, back in the Art Bell days on Coast to Coast AM, the original Art Bell show, I did a Christmas special with Art every year. And what would be fun, I think, is to get out all of those shows, because I had, of course, I have the recordings of those, and it would be fun to put out those recordings, because they were very interesting, let's put it that way. The one year I did a special on the Russian space program, and it was a three-hour show, and I always tried to go someplace special where I was really in the mood. And that particular night, I went to a ski area. And I remember all night there was the hum of the snow blowing machines and the other machines grading the hillsides, etc., and doing work. They work at night, so everything is groomed and ready in the daytime. But I remember, of course, the Art Bell Coast to Coast show, just like now, it was at midnight. And so I went there, and it was very beautiful, looking out the window with the hills and the snow and the ski and the moon, and it was just one of those special events that I want to recount. And in the last couple of minutes, I want to recount a Christmas. I've spent much of my time on this planet alone. And some of it was traveling, some of it was off doing my projects, but I want to recount one Christmas that I particularly remember. I was in a third world country, and I was in a vehicle that I had set up that I could actually live out of. So I was on a road up through a winding mountain pass, and I pulled off on a little area off the side of the road, and I went to sleep. Had the side doors of this vehicle open, and I woke up in the morning. It was a beautiful sunny morning, and I look out the side, and there's a young lad sitting there cross-legged about 20 feet away, sitting there looking at me. And I was kind of astounded because it was in the middle of nowhere. So at any rate, he was kind of an indigenous person. I didn't speak the language there, and he couldn't speak to me. So at any rate, I was in the process the night before of going under the vehicle to change the oil. So I showed the young lad the nut under there where you remove and change the oil, and I said, like a motion, do you have a wrench? You know, and he goes, ah. So we go down the mountainside. It takes about 10 minutes to walk down the mountainside to a little hut. And so his parents are there, and so they welcome me in. And the first thing they do is offer me some Christmas bread. It was just like hard bread, and it had some sprinklings of sugar, and these sugar crystals were very big, and they were all different colors, and they were sprinkled on top of the bread. So at any rate, I ate one, and they only had three. There was one for each one of them, but they insisted that I eat one myself, and they divided the other two amongst themselves. And then we got to the point of the wrench, and so the little boy goes back and gets his dad to get the toolbox out, which is a cigar box. And so at any rate, they come up and they open up the cigar box, and there's one wrench. And it's one of those old molded iron wrenches with an open end on it. And I thought, well, this is absurd. This is not going to fit. So at any rate, I looked at it, you know, I said, you know, it's kind of about the right size. So I go up and I put it on the bolt of the oil, and it is exactly the correct size for the nut on the pan where I'm trying to change my oil. And so anyway, I changed the oil, and they look like, yeah, that's the wrench. Of course it fits. Anyway, that's one of my Christmas stories. And I want to wish you all a Merry Christmas, and hope you are as happy as the little family I met in that mountain pass that day. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.